This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Law Talk on Joy Drive.
Each year from 25th of November to the 10th of December, the 16 Days of Activism campaign runs internationally, calling for the prevention and elimination of violence against women and girls. And this campaign is a global movement that seeks not only to raise awareness of the prevalence of such violence, but also to inspire action to address the underlying cultural attitudes, behaviours and systems that allow it to continue. It's a time to reflect, to have conversations, and to consider what each of us can do individually and collectively to contribute to lasting change. And joining me to discuss this topic is a familiar voice here on Joy, family law managing partner Sally Nichols from Nichols Family Lawyers. Sally, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure, Warren. It's such an important topic, so I'm really grateful to be here to help out today.
And we're also joined by Jade Blackerley. Jade is the CEO of WIRE, the only Victorian-wide information and referral service operated by women, non-binary and gender diverse people for women, non-binary and gender diverse people. Jade, welcome.
Thanks, Warren. It's great to be here.
Now, in honour of the upcoming 16 Days of Activism campaign, we're going to be taking a closer look at the wide-ranging social impacts of family violence. Sally, can you start by explaining what we mean when we talk about family violence?
Certainly, Warren. Family violence refers to situations where one person uses power and control over another within a family or family dynamic. So this often involves behaviours that are threatening or controlling and can instill a sense of fear in a person. This abuse can take many forms, including physical, sexual, emotional, social, spiritual or financial harm. The legal definition of family violence also encompasses forced marriage and dowry coercion that's only recently been considered a form of family violence.
Thank you so much, Sally. Jade, I think it's important to clarify, when we talk about family violence, are we just referring to intimate partners, or can it also occur in other family or household settings?
Yeah, I think that's a really important point to make, because whilst most family violence statistically does happen between intimate partners, well, at least that's the most commonly that's reported, it also can and does happen in many other types of relationships, which can include between siblings, between parents and children, including often adult children, and between other relatives. And in Victoria, there's also recognition that different cultural definitions of family apply. And so family violence can include non-biologically related family members, and violence from non-related carers is also covered by family violence legislation in Victoria.
Sal?
Yeah, the tragic reality is that family violence can affect anyone regardless of their background or circumstance. It doesn't discriminate. It cuts across age, gender, culture and socioeconomic status, which is why awareness and education are so important.
Now, drawing on your experience supporting victim survivors, could you speak to some of the immediate and long-term social impacts that family violence can have on individuals?
Yeah, sorry. So I guess, yeah, you're right. We hear a lot about physical, emotional, sort of practical impacts, but the social ones are often the ones we don't hear much about. I think in the short term, we see victim survivors often lose their connections to friends, to supportive families, to services or systems that matter to them. And this can happen directly through the behaviour of the person using violence, who might be isolating them, threatening their relationships. It can also happen when people spread disinformation, which can make it really difficult to maintain friendships, maintain employment, things like that. And I think because our LGBTIQA plus communities can be small, there is often a lot of interconnectedness between people who are in family violent relationships. And this can really sort of multiply the fact that our social circles and our community circles are often really connected, and make it really difficult for the victim survivor to maintain their important social connections. And I think also people often have to relocate for safety. Mm. And so then the isolation that comes with that, moving away from their homes, and often having to stay away from places that are really familiar for them.
Sal, I should ask you, how does family violence present differently in LGBTQIA plus relationships or households compared to, say, heterosexual relationships?
Sure. Well, look, unfortunately, the information that we have at the moment is that LGBTIQIA plus individuals experience family and domestic violence at disproportionately high rates. So whilst research is still limited, recent studies indicate that members of the community are more likely than their heterosexual counterparts to face intimate partner violence. And a significant factor contributing to this is entrenched homophobia, biophobia and transphobia. And family violence in rainbow households often includes traditional forms of abuse, such as physical, sexual and emotional harm. But I think we've discussed it before, Warren, it also frequently manifests through identity-based tactics. For example, abusers may threaten to out a partner without their consent, withhold or sabotage access to gender-affirming healthcare, or deliberately misgender or invalidate a partner's identity.
Now, we're chatting with Nichols Family Lawyers Managing Partner Sally Nichols and WIRE CEO Jade Blackerley about the social impacts of family violence and how it can set people on a pathway to poverty. We just heard from Jade about, I suppose, Jade's experience supporting victim survivors. What about you, Sally? Have you got anything to say on that?
Well, I think one of the things that really actually comes to mind, and we were chatting about it as a team today, is actually the impact on children. Mm. And I think that's something that just has to be put high on the agenda. Children can be profoundly affected when they witness abuse directed at a parent or a carer. And when they're living in a family violence situation, studies actually show, and we were chatting to an esteemed psychologist today who actually picked the developmental issues for children in terms of their brain development and, you know, maintaining their inability to actually affect and have empathy later on in life, because they go into fear and flight mode. They often go into paralysis. So this can be assisted, but it's something I think that we really have to shout out for kids who just don't have a voice as they should in the community.
So this could affect them for their entire lives.
Oh, absolutely. It affects their physical, psychological and emotional development, their sense of safety. And I think what is shocking, we're all pet lovers here, as we know, but it's the physical abuse or cruelty to others, including pets, is something that we've actually seen in the family law space. And there are new laws to actually impact and include, obviously, the treatment of pets as a form of violence is now being recognised, and also the deep bond between pets and family members is actually now being called out, and that was in response to pets actually being used as a tool in family violence situations, which is just awful.
Now, bringing it back to why continued advocacy through initiatives like the 16 Days of Activism is so important, despite the progress that's been made in raising awareness, many victim survivors still face challenges, significant challenges, in leaving violent and abusive relationships or accessing support. What are some of these barriers, Sal?
One of the barriers, and I know Jade speaks so well on this, is actually access to financial support. So financial abuse is a common tactic used by perpetrators. They often control or restrict their partner's access to funds, making it extremely difficult for the victim survivor to make independent decisions. So when it comes to leaving, the lack of financial resources can be a significant obstacle. Without money for housing, legal support or day-to-day living, planning a safe exit becomes far more complex. And another significant barrier for victim survivors is fear for themselves, for their children. Survivors may worry about direct retaliation from their partner, and we need to listen to them. It's something I've been taught by WIRE, that when I have victim survivors, they know the limitations. They're very aware. They practice being safe for a long time. And sometimes when you're trying to help them, it can be a little bit frustrating, Warren, because you don't understand just the entrenched fear of actually trying to make a move and what the retaliation might be. So this can include physical harm or emotional abuse or manipulation aimed at children, and as I mentioned before, at pets.
Jade?
Yeah, I think what you're saying is exactly right, Sally. And one thing I would add is that it's really important to remember that eroding someone's self-confidence and their self-belief and their sense that they're worth help is actually a really deliberate key tactic that gets used in family violence. So one of the really important things to remember is that many victim survivors don't expect anyone to believe them, and they don't expect anyone to help them because they've spent all this time being told that no one will help them, that they're not worth anything, and that they deserve the abuse that they've experienced.
Does that stop them speaking out?
Yeah, so it makes it really hard to speak out. And unfortunately, sometimes our systems do respond in the way that they've been fearful that they will, and that just reinforces it. And I think the other thing to remember is that leaving a violent relationship is the most dangerous time in a family violence relationship. So that fear that you talked about, Sal, around retaliation and all that, it's not just in someone's head. It's very real. It's the biggest risk time for death, for injury, for serious kind of harm. And so we need to be really mindful of that when we're offering support.
Absolutely. When we're looking at safety plans, we really take it seriously, and that's why we refer clients to WIRE to look at safety plans. It's extremely real, and we've had some tragic situations at work and very unexpected situations. So we really need to listen to victim survivors and actually take their fears seriously.
I imagine the very act of actually trying to contact someone for help can be quite risky. I mean, people can overhear phones, they can check phone logs, there's all sorts of things that...
Yeah, and I think particularly now, like, you know, now technology and using technology to continue abuse is really, really common. And we do find we have to develop a whole lot of strategies. And again, listening to the person, as Sally's talking about, is that they often know what is likely to happen for them. So sometimes we have to be creative in how we interact with people and connect with people, but always taking the lead from them about what's the best way to do that.
I remember in COVID there were incredible strategies because people were at home, locked at home with the perpetrator, and that was a really difficult time.
Yeah, really.
Jay, just on that, in terms of support, what are some of the ways that WIRE helps victim survivors overcome the barriers we've been talking about?
Yeah, well, I think the framework we really use at WIRE is that the person knows best. So we have women, trans and gender diverse people can contact us about anything. And we do that through the phone, we do it online, we do it in person, a whole range of different sort of approaches. And really where we start from is listening to them and hearing from them what it is that's happening and what it is that they want to achieve. We've been doing this work for just over 40 years. So we kind of know who's around and who's doing what in the community. So we're a good starting point to then link people up to the supports that they want, help them know what's available from a legal point of view, from a practical point of view, emotional support, a whole range of things. But really we start with that place of having a conversation and just making a really easy to access way for people to find the support that they need.
I imagine you've seen a lot of, over those 40 years. Do you find that victim survivors can have sometimes downplay and say, oh, no, they won't do that, they won't do that, but yet you know what the potential is?
Definitely. And I think for our service, because we're not technically focused just on family violence, people will often call us and say, oh, I just wanted to chat. My partner's getting a bit cranky or I'm a bit worried. And as we talk more and more, we hear what we know is family violence. And it's a real skill, I guess, the team have developed in how to gently have those conversations and say, you know, what I'm hearing, I'm a bit worried about what I'm hearing, or what you're saying sounds to me a bit like X or Y. And often we're the first place that people are able to put words to the experiences that they've had.
So?
Oh, I'm wondering, having worked, and I don't want to give away my age because that would be unfair, but I've actually worked with WIRE now for over 30 years. And they're just excellent. They know how to support victim survivors. So I just can't encourage working with WIRE or people, listeners, actually referring themselves to WIRE if they're in that situation.
Now, before we conclude, are there any other services you wanted to mention today as well?
Look, I'd also like to recommend Rainbow Door, a specialist helpline that offers information, support and referrals for LGBTIQA plus Victorians, as well as their friends and family. It's a free service and can be accessed via phone, text or email. Is there any others, Jade, that you'd recommend?
Look, I think if you are needing somewhere to go, if you're needing somewhere to be sort of safe right now, places like Safe Steps are fantastic, and they're available 24/7, which is a real bonus as well. And I think it depends who you are. You know, there are services, and it is about reaching out, because there are services that focus particularly on supporting people from different cultural communities, people with disabilities, older people. So I think that's the thing to remember too, is that, you know, we're all complex individuals, and it's about listening to and thinking about where we're going to get the best support.
Just a question, does someone reach out and do you find that that's then the beginning of the process, or do they sometimes step back and it takes a few goes to realise what's going on?
Yeah, often it does. We will often have people who'll call us saying, oh, I rang you and talked to you about whatever a year ago, but I've thought more about it, or things have changed. But we also know that to leave a violent relationship, on average in Australia, people try to leave about 7 times usually before it's actually successful. And that's for all the reasons that we've talked about, whether that's their own sense of self, whether it's about the practical realities of finances, whether it's about threats that are being made. You know, it takes time, and we know you've just got to keep being there until people are ready.
Sally and Jade, thank you both for joining us today and sharing your insights. Family violence has profound social impacts that affect not only those directly involved, but also the wider community. And during the 16 days of activism, taking even a small step, such as learning more or speaking up in your community, can contribute to meaningful change and challenge the systems that allow this violence to continue. Sally Nichols is the managing partner of family law firm Nichols Family Lawyers, and Jade Blackerley is the CEO of Wire. Thank you both for joining us today. It's an important conversation.
Our pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.